So yes, my name is Amy Edwards. I'm a biologist with WDFW. I've been working in the Chehalis Basin since about 2013, and I've specifically been working with CHUM since around 2016. So I'm here today to talk about the most beloved and respected of all salmon species, CHUM, specifically Gray's Harbor Fall CHUM and their abundance and distribution. So when I'm referring to Gray's Harbor, that's including the main stem Chehalis as well as major tributaries, including the Hump Tulips and South Harbor Trips as well. So why should we care about CHUM and Gray's Harbor? Well, they are an incredible source of marine-derived nutrients. We don't have populations of pinks. We don't have large populations of sockeye. So there are mass spawner species. They come in mass. They die in mass. They provide a lot of nutrients that can help with our riparian zones. It can also help feed our juvenile fish. They help clean the gravel when they come in and spawn in mass. They play a very important ecological role. They're also very important from our management perspective. We have been wondering for a while if we might be underestimating the number of CHUM that have been returning to Gray's Harbor each year. And as a result of that, there have been some instances in the past where we've had to curtail or limit our Chinook and coho fisheries and some of our other fisheries because we've been afraid we wouldn't make escapement on CHUM. So both ecological and management implications with Gray's Harbor CHUM. As I mentioned, we think we might be underestimating our escapement estimates. So how do we currently estimate CHUM escapement? The method that we use currently was developed in the late 60s, early 70s. My understanding is that when it was developed, it was just out of a necessity that we needed something immediately with the hope that we would revisit it pretty soon, update it, make improvements to it. You can see this quote here is from Rick Bricks. He was a WDFW biologist. He was kind of the last person out of our office to do a lot of work with Gray's Harbor CHUM. So unfortunately, it's been many years since we've been able to readdress this issue and look at updating our methods. So as I said, one of the big things that's potentially lacking with our current method is that abundance, how many CHUM are coming back, as well as our distribution. We haven't really tried to look and see where CHUM are distributing within the Chehalis Basin since Rick Brick's work back in the 70s. So with those two things in mind, first off, our project was developed primarily, as we said, to if we're not getting a good estimate of abundance currently, can we get a good estimate? Can we actually devise how many CHUM are returning to Gray's Harbor this year? That was kind of our primary goal. On top of that, can we figure out where they're spawning? What's their distribution? This plays a really important role now too with the restoration projects in mind. So where are we finding concentrations of those marine-derived nutrients? Where are we getting that impact from CHUM? Can we identify those areas either to protect, say we're getting good influx here? Are there areas we may want to increase CHUM so we can get some naturally derived nutrients in these areas? As well as we have several restoration models that are being developed currently. So hopefully the data that we're collecting can help inform and update those models with actual data that we're collecting these past several years and future years. As I said too, we've been collecting data on CHUM for quite a long time. We have about 40 years worth of data. We definitely want to find a way that we can take what we're learning now about CHUM and relate it back to our historical data. As well as moving forward, can we maybe develop new and better protocols, have a better CHUM abundance and distribution idea in the future? So it's a pretty tall order for our project. So where do we begin? So we begin with trying to figure out where should we start looking and surveying for CHUM. Our current understanding is that if you see this circle right here, this is where we understand that CHUM primarily spawn within the Chehalis Basin. It's mostly from the Black River down, and primarily in the major tributaries, not as much spawning in the main stem Chehalis. We do have some historical accounts of CHUM getting into the upper basin, but they're kind of few and far between. And as far as our current population, our understanding is that they spawn from Black River drainage downstream. that's a really big area to cover. We can't necessarily go out and count every single chum that comes back to the entire lower Chehalis Basin each year. So we decided to break it down into manageable chunks, basically at the sub-basin level. So 2017, we decided to start with the Satsip and Wainuchi. Those are two major spawning tributaries for chum, so that's where we decided to start our assessment. Those are still two pretty large drainages, a lot of river mile to cover, so we decided to break it down further by adopting what's called an index supplemental survey frame. So we find small sections of stream that we can monitor the entire population. We can go in there weekly, and then during one point during the peak spawning of the season, we go out and we blitz the entire system, and then we take what's known in our indexes and expand it to our supplemental surveys. So the dark red sections here are our indexes. The lighter sections are where we covered during our supplemental surveys. And when we selected our indexes, we tried to get them in a variety of stream sizes. So we have some main stem sections, some tributary sections, with this idea that there might be some differences in how chum behave, their lifespan, and some of the habitat that's different within main stem versus tributaries. So how are we counting chum within these indexes? Well, what we do is we go at the beginning of the season when there's hopefully no fish present. We monitor each week, actually just physically tallying the number of live and dead chum. Hopefully we'll encompass that peak. We'll see the drop off, and there'll be zero at the end of the season. It's important that we get these counts of zeros at the beginning, at the end. It kind of helps us know that we think we got the entire run, that we're not missing fish. And if everything goes according to plan, we get these beautiful graphs where we can see the fish coming in, we see the peak, and then we see them dropping off. We were able to do this successfully in 24 indexes between the Wainuchi and the Satsup. And so what we end up with is kind of a total number of fish that spawned within certain sections of stream over the entire season. But what does that really mean? We counted, you know, a total of 600 fish over the entire season. Does that actually mean that 600 fish spawned within that section? Not necessarily. You know, it's entirely possible that if we come in week 44, we come back in 45, we might be counting some of the same fish again. So it's not, you know, 600 total at the end of the season does not mean 600 fish. In addition to our live and dead counts, we also selected three indexes where we did a carcass tagging effort. So what this provided us was an actual abundance estimate in these three indexes. So it gave us a hard count of, yes, this many chum came back to this section of stream over the entire of the season and spawned there. It's carcass tagging is very intensive. It's a lot of work. It takes a lot of man hours and bodies. So what's the point in going through that? Why do we include this? We did it to get this thing called apparent survey life. Survey life is essentially how long is a chum alive in an index? How long does it stay there and stay alive? What this apparent survey life does is it allows us to kind of link with our live counts. So when I was talking about, you know, we might be double counting in our indexes, these live fish, this apparent survey life helps us basically take that live count and make it into an actual abundance estimate, helps us account for that double counting. So with the combination of our live counts and our carcass tagging, we get a survey life, and we're able to do that for each of the unique indexes that we're surveying. So that gets us abundances within our, you know, narrow, short sections of stream. So then what we do is during the peak spawn time, we go out and we blitz the entire system, trying to find every spawning chum we possibly can. And this also works not only because it allows us to then expand our counts to a total abundance for the entire basin, but it also helps us get at that distribution as well as looking for those hot spots of spawning. So are we finding those concentrations of marine nutrients? Are we finding where we're getting deliveries of that? So during the 2017 season in the Wainuchi, looking at here, you can see red is our really dense areas. This is where we have 500 to 1,000 fish spawning per mile. And then going down in color is orange, less so, green being we're having 0 to 50 fish spawning per mile. So we definitely identified this is about a 10-mile section in the main stem Wainuchi, where we saw really heavy spawning, concentrated spawning. We also had concentrated spawning. This is Decker Creek right here and the East Fork Satsup, where we also saw some really concentrated spawning of chum. So you can see they're widely distributed, but they, when we're looking for those pockets of nutrient delivery, they're definitely in concentrated areas. So what this boils down to at the end, if we do our fancy, you know, index sup, carcass tagging, all this, it kind of comes down to one solid number where we estimated about 14,000 chum returning to the Wainuchi and the Satsup each. How we kind of break this out as well is roughly in kind of our main stem versus tributary spawning. This is divided by our foot and boat surveys. So foot kind of relating to small tributaries, boats relating to larger main stems. So you can see that while the Wainuchi and Satsup had a pretty equal number of chum returning, they were distributed very differently. So blue is our main stem section. So you can see the Wainuchi primarily main stem spawning with a little bit of tributary spawning. And the Satsup, it was about half and half, half main stem spawning, half tributary spawning. So how similar do the two methods seem to be? Our current method of estimating escapement versus this updated method that we're working on. Well, in 2017, the current method estimated that there were about 18,000 chum that returned to the entire of Grays Harbor. For us, with the Wainuchi and Satsup combined, we estimated 28,000 chum for just those two sub-basins. That doesn't include major spawning tributaries like the Hump Tulips, the Hoquiam, the Wishkaw, Coquitlam, South Harbor Tribs. So we had, just in those two tributaries, about 10,000 more chum estimated returning. So what have we learned so far? I would say that our idea that we might be underestimating the chum, return of chum to Grays Harbor would seem to be true, which is and pretty significant at that. We can definitely confirm that chum are widely using the Wainuchi and the Satsup. But as I said, even though they're widely distributed, they're definitely spawning in concentrated sections, and that's where we're getting those deliveries of nutrients are in concentrated areas. So what are we looking at moving forward? Well, we did the Satsup and Wainuchi, but that's not the entire area of chum spawning. There's a lot of area left to cover. This upcoming fall, we'll be moving to the Hump Tulips, which is another major spawning tributary. So we'll be implementing the same method that we used in the Satsup and Wainuchi in the Hump Tulips, where hopefully we'll get another abundance estimate. In our work in the Hump Tulips, we're also hoping to increase our knowledge of chum distribution and densities. So can we identify more areas where we're getting dense chum spawning? And looking, I think, to the future as well with, can we reconcile or can we utilize our 40 years worth of data, potentially update that data set and move forward with new protocols? That's something that is definitely still in our minds, and we're currently working on developing ideas, but before we can have any conclusive methods on that, we definitely need to finish our abundance and distribution side of things before we can tackle that issue. So just like to give a thank you to the Washington State Legislature for funding this project, to Weyerhaeuser Green Diamond and many private landowners that granted us access to this work, Bingham Creek Hatchery, Satsup Springs, to the many field staff and volunteers and Quinault and Chilliwack tribes who provided data, information, and helped collect this data. It takes a lot of man hours and a lot of people to make this project happen. So big thank you to everybody. And yeah, like I said, I also put my contact information up here. So if you need to contact me in the future or have future questions, feel free to do so. And at this time, I'll open it up for questions. We're using a fish count because we can't specifically identify reds by chum. As I said, they're a mass spawner species, so they come in, they spawn all on top of each other. The females will sometimes dig multiple reds, but it's so crazy and hectic that you can't really identify one fish to one red. So we have to utilize the live dead counts. It's also just there's so many fish when you have 1,000 fish in a mile long section, it's difficult, you know, can't exactly count 1,000 reds. So live counts are what's used, live and dead counts, as well as the carcass tagging effort.
Yes. So I wonder in your work in the Wynoochian Sat Center, when you found areas that were high density of chum and areas where no chum spawning, if you noted the characteristics of the habitat as to what was attracting them or what was lacking, identify restoration efforts?
That's something that, not specifically, we didn't take necessarily any habitat metrics or, you know, we have definitely some observations. And when we're out there serving, I certainly personally have that in mind. The East Fork Satsup and Decker Creek have been known chum strongholds for many years. Part of that is the current understanding is that chum are attracted to spring-fed systems, to upwelling, to groundwater. And so the East Fork, Satsup, Decker Creek are spring-fed areas. Looking in the main stem Wynoochee, definitely that 10-mile section where we found those high concentrations is probably the most complex section of the main stem that it has. It's incredibly braided. There's many side channels. There's a lot of meandering. There's definitely gravel bars present. So a lot of when we're seeing these chum, it's when we're coming downstream, you see a large gravel bar, you get to the end of the gravel bar and there's a large pocket of concentration of 100 to 200 chum. Or it's going up into these side channels located within that stream section and we find them in the side channels and those areas as well. So it did seem to coincide with complexity and again, possibly groundwater influence in the Wynoochee main stem.
New and old hot spots. So some are kind of turning on and some turning off.
Yeah, that was kind of also the old kind of referring to, like I said, we have a good data set and we have some knowledge of where chum are currently, you know, high concentrations. Some of that's in our historical, we have historical chum indexes that contribute to how we do our current escapement estimates. And those are four indexes, and there are three are located in the East Fork Satsup, one is in the Hump Tulips. So we've known that those areas have received high chum spawning for many, many years. They still receive high chum spawning, but we're definitely finding new areas that they're popping up. So some of those old areas are staying true. Some of those old areas have definitely changed, but we're finding new areas as well. Yes. Not necessarily for the those specific watersheds. How we currently are doing it is for the entirety of Grace Harbor. So our escapement goal for all of Grace Harbor is 21,000 fish. How that 21,000 fish number was set as our escapement goal is a little hazy. It was set back in the late 60s as part of the methodology that was developed. My understanding is that some of it came from some commercial data, I think some local knowledge, but there's not a great understanding as to why that 21,000 was selected as our escapement goal.
Do you see an opportunity to develop escapement goals, updated escapement goals based on our current understanding and our understanding of the habitat and watersheds so we can manage a little more, with a little more nuance?
Yeah, I think that's something we're definitely working on when I was, you know, talking about, like, hopefully future protocols and future recommendations. Some of that is, you know, we're, how we are looking at how many chum return back is entirely based on, you know, meeting that goal of 21,000. So if we're not getting 21,000 back, we're getting a lot more. Hopefully we can maybe make some changes towards that. And yeah, getting it more specific would also, I think, be a hope as well. So certainly. Yes, Mara.
So Jamie, my understanding of why they're managed in total is it has to do with existing genetic results that suggest it's one large population. We are updating those genetic analysis with new, there's more refined tools, so we'll have that information. But the existing information suggests that it one chum, meaning that chum that come out, come from the SATs of, don't necessarily return from the SATs. That's our current understanding. That's why they're managed together, not based on specific.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Thank you.